Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Bill Roden on Sports. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Again, that's www.audibletrial.com/Bill Roden on Sports. Check it out.
Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports here live at MetLife Stadium with the great Jamal Murphy. Murph.
Good to be here. Very, very active day. A lot going on today. This weekend. The whole weekend.
A lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
So we got to keep this guy in office.
No comment.
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway. But, you know, it was a good day. You know, the Jets. With their first win of the season at home.
Right.
They beat the struggling Miami Dolphins 20-6.
Yeah.
Six.
Yeah.
And it was like that said that was a that last touchdown.
Yeah.
I think it was a fantasy touchdown.
Yeah, it was a fantasy touchdown for those sad souls that chose to start Cutler of all people on your fantasy team. He actually got you a touchdown at the very end. He played horribly. The whole game, the Jets look like a completely new team. I got to give them credit. I know it's just the Dolphins,
but the way
the Jets looked the first 2 weeks, I mean,
against the Dolphins, real teams,
right? And the Dolphins were favored, so the Jets weren't supposed to win this game. Mm. They did. Their defense looked great all of a sudden. Offense was okay.
Jay Cutler.
Offense did just enough, and they won. Like I said, it was a shutout most of the game. They were up 20-0 until a meaningless Jay Cutler touchdown.
Well, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for Ty Bowles.
Yeah.
It was a good day. But, the thing about the game is much more. I mean, the game was almost background because the last 2 days have just been crazy. It's been bizarre.
Right.
Typical, with the president in a rally down in Alabama. Just kind of like going into his act.
Yeah.
He was like.
He was comfortable.
Yeah, he was comfortable talking to his base. And whenever he talked to his base, the guy's shameless.
Right.
He's shameless, fishing for votes. I mean, I think he's the kind of guy, man, I think if he, well, I won't mention it, but he would become whatever he needs to become to get votes. So he told this group, talk about the NFL. He took on the NFL now.
Right.
And he was, he basically started signifying, talking about people's mamas. and when you start doing that, the League of Brothers,
right?
And you start playing the dozens,
right?
You wading up to your neck in doo doo,
right?
So he said, I tell the crowd, if it was, how would you like if the owners, if the guys, just said if players protested, he said, fire those quotes, son of bitches,
right?
Now, and the following crowd said, wait a minute, fire those son of bitches now. If you in the hood or whatever, he said, man, he started talking about people's mamas. And that was, I think, kind of crossed the line. A lot of players who were neutral.
Right.
What Trump is doing, just like with anybody when you play the dozens, man. At some point, you say, man, if you do that again,
I dare you.
Right. Or one of your boys said, man, you gonna let them talk about your mama like that?
Right.
And so that's what people is, man, you gonna let them talk, let that guy talk about you like that?
Yeah. So, and then it worked because it got everybody talking.
Right.
NFL players, NBA players, even earlier in the day, I think that day, Friday, I think it was the Golden State Media Day, and you had Steph Curry. Someone asked him a question during the media day. They're getting into whether they're going to visit the White House, celebrate their NBA championship with a White House visit. And Steph Curry basically, he kept it real and said, honestly, I don't want to go. We'll talk about it as a team, but I don't want to go.
Right.
And then Trump, listening closely as always, had a quick tweet saying, it's an honor to go to the White House. I see Steph Curry is hesitating, so I revoke my invitation, as right. if it's his invitation.
I mean, and then what Seth Kirsch could say, shit, we're going to February. You may not be the president.
That's
in
true.
February. You may.
That's true.
He said, I'm going to be there, will you?
Yeah, that's what he should have said. He should have said, from what I see Mueller doing, I don't know.
I said, you may not be there, brother. You talk about you're rescinding the invitation. You may be asking me to come. But, you know, it's so funny because that's what he's doing. He's signifying. Trump is signifying. And I just thought about it. I said, you know, this is a signifying president.
Yeah.
And but you signify with the wrong group of people, because athletes, these guys, man, they spend all day in the locker rooms, and that's all they do.
Right.
They talk about each other. They talk about, you know, man, what's that you wearing? They talk. So when you start signifying, these guys like Draymond Green, man, he would probably have the president in tears if you want to start talking about, you know, people's mamas. And,
oh yeah.
Oh man, where'd you get that hair from? Did you buy it?
Let me grab that.
Yeah, let me grab that hair.
No, you know? You're right. And then that's the thing with Trump. He acts like he. And I guess to some people, you know, some squares, maybe he is cool, but he tries to act like, you know, the whole thing back in the day with the with the grab your pussy stuff.
Right.
And that, you know, he talking about locker room talk. You don't know anything about locker room talk.
Right.
These are real people talking about locker room talk.
I mean, and they're saying, well, if you're going to bring this to the locker room, brother, you know, Trump would last a day in the locker room, like talking that trash and looking like him. But they say, okay. So he tells LeBron, so he says, oh, the White House is a... it's a special place. It was till you took over.
Yeah, it was till you bum.
You bum.
I mean, and you got to give. I mean, LeBron stepped up with that, or still, you know, stepped out. However you want to, whatever your view is. I mean, he put him. You know, he came out and was like, you know, forget this political correctness.
Well, you have to, because it just dawned on me today. And Jamil, kind of, she's the first, I think, journalist in our who recognized. You know what? We're still acting like this is like the Obama. Right? This is like. It's like the way it's like now becomes sort of like a brothel.
Mm-hmm.
And like this is just a barroom brawl. Mm-hmm. And I can say anything because he's going to say anything.
Right.
He's going to holler across the locker room, hey, you SOB. And I say, hey, you MF. Yeah, yeah, ha ha. Yeah. And he's slapping butts. That's what this guy likes. He likes this kind of stuff. You know, so it's a brawl. It's like Hagler Hearns slugging it out for three rounds. And I think that people they're still kind of treating this like it was the Obama White House, where everything's kind of civil and the pretense. No, this is completely, you know, bare knuckles, you know, hitting below the belt, saying anything, you know, signifying. And he can't win against these guys who signifying and the NFL players. He's essentially pushed these guys into unity.
Right.
He's pushed them. He's made these guys focus, because he's attacking all of them.
Right.
He's black, white. He's attacking all of them.
And all of us, you know, all minorities out there, and football fans and everything. Now all of a sudden we're looking at players like, and it was already happening, but now there's even more pressure on the players to actually revolt, do something because
he's daring.
Yeah, he's daring you, and we see it. You know, it's like. Like you said, you playing a dozen, there's a whole crowd of 10,000 people watching. They're like, oh, what you going to do?
That's right. Yeah, they're saying, you going to let them do that?
Come on. You're going to stand for yourself?
and with these competitors, so that's what made these today fascinating, because now we're saying, but it, so funny. It started, just think, this time last year, it just started with one guy kneeling.
Right.
And now it is mushroomed into this whole thing. Some guys kneeling, some guys.
With the fist.
Yeah, some guys raise their fist.
Some guys stretching. LeSean McCoy, who was one of those guys, we just said there's some guys, you know, pushed some guys over. There were guys who were neutral. We were joking about LeSean McCoy last episode.
You're talking about you violated the police department.
I might have to apologize now. Sorry, LeSean.
Sorry, LeSean. I didn't know you come on the show?
Yeah, come on the show. You know, we're sorry. But, you know, he, you know, before he was kind of like questioning the whole Kaepernick thing. When Trump said what he said, he goes on Twitter and says, "Oh my, you know, wow, we have a president who's an asshole." Mm. And then today for the national anthem, he's in the line, and not only he didn't kneel, he got down and just kept doing all these stretches during the national anthem as if it wasn't going on. It was, I mean, the video is just. You know, I'm sorry. It's funny to me. It's just funny. You know?
It is funny. You know?
So, I mean, yeah.
You don't have to apologize. You're in the North.
I'm just saying. It was funny. You know?
I know, but you're just straight. But that's what it's kind of turned into. It's like everybody. It is a reality show. It's kind of like, well, hell, Monday Night Football. What's going to happen tomorrow?
Right.
You know?
Right. Tonight, too? Yeah, there's a game tonight.
Yeah, the game tonight. And then Brady, even Brady, who, you know, is a Trump supporter, this guy was like, well, I think Kaepernick should have a job.
Yeah, because
he's, you know, he's at the end of the day, he's like, hey, man, they've used this term, even Josh McCown, like, well, we're all brothers
right.
in this NFL fraternity. And when you start, anybody, president, when you start talking about and free speech, that you guys can't say this, can't say that, and you're right, Jamal, that just should not resonate with athletes or whatever, but that's kind of in everybody's workplace. And you're right, to an extent, everybody who's got a job, I mean, the company says, okay, these are rules and regulations.
Right.
And at some point, you got to decide, okay, most of it you can live with because you're getting paid.
Right.
But there may come a time that, wait a minute, I this is kind of tough. And then I think that what we're seeing now is everybody has got to decide how they're going to handle their Ali moment, Muhammad Ali moment.
Right.
And, you know, everybody talks about Ali and in the abstract. Oh, yeah, he did this. Oh, yeah, well, will you? When it's your turn, when it's your time, to not step up,
right.
to not step up for the draft,
right.
or when it's your turn to be on the victory stand and raise your fist,
right.
knowing that you're dooming yourself, or when it's your time, like Kaepernick, to kneel down,
right.
will you do it, or will you do what most people do? So, well, yeah, I was just playing, yeah.
Right, and most people are still toeing that line,
right?
Is it, you know, still the minority? The minority is growing, but it's still the minority who are actually kneeling. You know, you look at teams. Today, Miami was four guys kneeling, you know, across the league. Even at the opening day, the morning game.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
The Jacksonville Ravens. You know, a lot. We look at it, a lot of people kneeling, but it was still probably less than half, or you know, right. a third of the team. Right. You know, Ravens. Ray Lewis was kneeling.
He was kneeling for forgiveness.
And then that's an interesting thing. I mean, that had to be an embarrassment to Trump because you know you're in London, you're in another country, supposed to be representing America's favorite sport, and you're protesting basically the president. You're protesting the president in another country.
Exactly, and that's what this is. I mean, it's really. Become a protest. First, it was a protest about police brutality and all that, which I think it still is. Now, like, I mean, it's a protest against you.
right.
Like, at LeBron, in the infamous words of LeBron, right. You bum.
You know. You bum.
Right. But you know, Trump has basically said, yeah, that's cool, because that's what I've turned this into. You know, we've converted the White House into like a shooting gallery or something. And like, as he said, it's not special anymore. Like, because the Golden State Warriors said, you know what? We're going to come to D.C. We ain't coming to the White House.
Right.
We're going. I think they may even go to like the Museum of the Museum of African American
History. Yeah.
Why not go there? That'd be great. And that's a
must go.
Yeah, you go there and they'll have the nice ceremony there.
Right.
And then they'll take a tour of that again, and people will be really pissed off.
Yeah.
And when they start the basement with the slave stuff and all, by the time they get to the top, they'll be ready to march to the White House. And said, where is he?
That's a good idea. Great idea. I mean, so like you said, teams handled it, you know, a bunch of different ways. Lots of stuff happened today in Minnesota. The singer of the anthem took a knee at the end.
Like, what? How deep is that?
That's
because we hope he could ever sing again.
Yeah, I hope so, but probably not there. You know, maybe some other states.
That was good, though.
Yeah,
that was actually.
I think that was Detroit, actually. I take that back, not Minnesota.
Well, now it figures.
Yeah.
Detroit, yeah. You know. It took a knee, and then
Pittsburgh.
Well, they stayed in the locker room.
Right, Tomlin.
Which I don't think that was a protest as much as it was, and he said that he wanted to basically not put anybody under pressure.
Right.
So let's say that, you know. But even with that, when they came out, they were booed.
Right. And you said that used to happen back in the day.
Well, yeah, back in the early when I think they started playing the national anthem before NFL games, 1931. And of all people, Woodrow Wilson, of all people, who some people call the precursor of Trump.
Mm.
You know. He introduced that, and then it used to be that they would play the national anthem while the teams, you know, were in the dressing room. Then after it finishes, then the teams would come out, you know. And some people have different. I personally would just like to see them doing away with the national anthem. I mean, we go to concerts; they don't play the national anthem for concerts,
right?
You know, they just get into the music,
right?
But when you politicize an event, and that's what you're doing, when you play the national anthem, it's nationalistic and it's political in this country. That national anthem, man, Star Spangled, it means a whole lot of different things, a whole lot of different people.
Right.
Including, you know, the people in Charlottesville carrying Nazi flags and Confederate flags.
Right.
They probably ain't that. They probably ain't like crazy about the Union flag, you know, because they were waving a Confederate flag. So when you do that before the game, and then you make people stand in baseball in the sixth inning, play God Bless America, you're politicizing the event, and now given just all this divisiveness and you know, when you do that, I would really like, I think that they should consider A, either doing away with it, or, you know, more teams decide, you know what, we'll just stay in the locker room till you finish. Then when you finish, we'll come out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the locker room, some guys could stand, some guys could sit, some guys could go to the bat. I mean, whatever.
Right.
Whatever you do.
And we'll never know. We'll never know. But, you know, as it is now, I guess Tomlin, that was his decision. And he said, like you said, he said he did it for the purpose of, you know, not politicizing, not you know, getting his player, having his players make a decision. Definitely not for any protest. It wasn't a protest that he kept them inside. It was just to avoid, you know, so they could do something as a team.
But it really was a protest. I mean, it wasn't, and it was, because, you know, you decided, you know, to just, in other words, you were aware of it, and you said, you know what, we're just not going to even deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe it wasn't a protest.
Right.
And then, so the Jets the Jets locked arms.
Yeah, they locked arms, which we've seen before, right? Remember last year, the Seattle Seahawks did it. I think the first game of the year.
Yeah.
We're going to lock arms.
And we're like, what?
Yeah.
What is exactly
right?
Does that mean?
And then, you know, and so after the game, you know, we asked the Jets. We asked DeMario Davis what the purpose of that was. Was it a protest? You know, why did you decide to lock arms? Was it a team decision? And you know, this is what he had to say.
It was a team decision that we want to send a message, you know, to the world. That, you know, in our back, in our locker room, it's a great thing about football is you have so many people from so many different backgrounds working together for a common goal. You know, our message for our team is one team, one goal. And that directly translates to the world that whatever problems that we face, we have to face them together. You know, that's the name of our country, is United States of America. And being on the sideline was simply being symbolic of unity. That we're not saying we have the answers to the problems in our country, but all we're saying is that whatever the answer is, whatever the solution is, we got to find it together. We're not going to help anything by being divided. It's going to take a united front, everybody working together for a common cause. And that's why we wanted to represent.
How do you feel personally about the statements that Trump made in the back and forth with the NBA players?
That's irrelevant, you know, about how I personally feel. I mean, I don't believe you should speak on anything if you don't have a solution to the problem. It's easy to speak about the problem. It's hard to find a solution. And that's what we wanted to represent today, is we're not saying we had an answer, but whatever the answer is, we got to try to find the answer together. It's going to take everybody working together to find the answer, everybody working towards a common goal. And that's the only way we're going to fix the problems in our country. It's going to take us working together, not us being divided, but everybody looking for a solution together.
Yeah, I kind of understand that, because at the end of the day, you know, they're trying to win a ball game.
Right.
They're trying to win a game. They're 0-2, trying not to be 0-3.
Right.
And they said, you know, we got to figure out, we cannot let this be a distraction. So what can we do to get us all on the same page?
Right. Right. Because, you know, it can be divisive, you know. And, you know, from my perspective, I want it. I want the argument to come out. Mm-hmm. You know, I want everybody, you know, the racist fans to be confronted with this. That's what I want. But if you're on a team, and you're trying, like you said, you're 0-2, you're trying to go 1-2, you're probably, you know, and definitely as coaches, black, white, or whatever, you know, coach in this league, you're worried about getting a W, period.
Right.
Okay? All this other stuff is just noise. First of all these coaches and players are known to over-focus. Like, they they block out everything. They're in the team facility,
right.
22 hours a day, you know what I'm saying? They're not trying to, they're not watching MSNBC.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they're trying to win a game. So right. I understand. Am I a little disappointed? Yes. But in the locked arms thing, because I think it's a big nothing.
Well, what did you say? When did you say Russell Simmons or somebody?
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of people, you know, everybody's making their thoughts known. But Russell Simmons, one of the people out there, tweeted saying, you know, he said he felt like the teams that stayed in the locker room were locked arms. He called them a bunch of bitches on Twitter. Wow. You know, he felt, you know, he wants to see some kind of stand like Kaepernick took, you know, from everybody. or not, or the people who are not taking a stand, I want to see them. You know, it's that type of thing. Right. Let me see who's taking a stand, who's not. Don't.
Which is, I mean, I think for all of us, I mean, it gets back to that Muhammad Ali moment. But we are getting to a point, I think, in this where what do you stand for?
Right.
What do you stand for? And what are you going to do? You know, and Trump is basically, as he's getting clobbered in almost every other phase of his administration, is, you know, but he's saying, and he's in everybody's face. He said, okay, what are you going to do? I'm going to call you SOBs.
Right.
You know, I'm going to say your boss should fire if you protest. And it's interesting, you know, you caught up with
Kenny Stills from the Dolphins wide receiver, and he has been outspoken mm-hmm. prior to this, all through this season, last season he's been outspoken, he's been on Kaepernick's side, and he had said earlier, he had told Miami reporters that you know he was kind of he thought he was about done with kneeling, maybe take it somewhere else, he had done it long enough. But then come this weekend, he was one of the four Dolphins that kneeled.
Yep.
And after the game, he was asked why, despite the fact that you said you were done with it, why did you kneel anyway this week? And he said that it was that Trump challenge that made him go back out there and do it. This is what he said.
Just felt like the comments by the president were being used to scare us, to intimidate us, and just... We're allowed to do that, and so I wanted to get involved. We had a bunch of younger guys that wanted to get involved, and I felt like it was the right time. I said earlier, it wasn't meant to be divisive. It still isn't meant to be divisive. I've done everything I can to try and bring people together, and people still aren't understanding. They're still not listening, and so at some point in time, we've got to take a step back and have tough conversations. You got to listen to people that don't agree with you. You got to step outside your comfort zone. And I just encourage people that are fans of mine, fans of the NFL, fans of the Dolphins, if you have a different opinion, if you don't necessarily agree with us, take a step back and try to have a tough conversation. Try to. I promise you, we're trying to do something that's right. We're trying to do something for other people. Like, this stuff might not affect me. It might not affect some of the other guys in the locker room, but it does affect people. And so we're just... We think what we're doing is right, and we're not trying to divide anybody. We're not trying to disrespect anybody. We've never been that way, and so I just encourage people to have a tough conversation.
Yeah, and it's you know he not only that, but I mean I think he really put the NFL owners on the spot, because remember there were some owners who were saying the same thing that he said, you know, like Jerry Jones.
Right.
If any of my guys protest. I'll fire. But see, here's the problem in this industry that runs on human beings. Jerry Jones, all those clowns know that if their offensive line or defensive unit decides to take the day off,
right?
He's done. They're done,
right?
Because people come to see these guys play,
right?
Or these women, whatever. They come to see players play.
Right.
You could be the owner and transfer that. They don't come to see Jerry Jones.
Right.
They may come to stay in your house, in your arena. They don't come to see you. So all of a sudden, if your quarterback and offensive line, all these guys said, man, you know, we're not playing, or we're going to take off a couple series, Jerry Jones, all those owners realize, and particularly in the league that's like 70-something% black,
yeah,
that, you know, they can't do that. And I know he said, Mr. President, we can't do that. With all due respect,
right,
we can't do. And that's why Roger Goodell, they authorized Roger. People say, oh, Roger Goodell, like he was in Starbucks. Says, you know what? I'm going to sit down and write. No.
Right.
They authorized him to write that, to write, because they know their labor force.
Right.
And they know that their fortunes rest on a labor force that is almost 60-70% black, and who by and large did something that people argue that the president did do, which is earn their jobs.
Right, and earn their money. And that's what annoys me too about a lot of the people who get, you know, who want to complain about the players, you know, using their First Amendment rights to speak out or protest. A lot of times you hear them say, "Oh, you know, these spoiled brat baby millionaires," as if they didn't earn that money.
Oh man, listen, more so than I think in any other area. And I mean, if you're going to be the president, you could argue that you can buy the presidency. Right. All right. You can buy it. In other words, if you have enough money, and I don't care who you, if you have enough money to run, you can pretty much buy at least having a shot at the presidency.
Right.
You don't buy your way into the NFL.
Nope.
The NBA, Major League Baseball.
To own it, you can.
To own it. No,
thing.
I'm talking about. Right. I'm talking about.
Yeah, but to play.
On the plate. No, man. Every single guy in that position, if you go back to everybody's history, and we've done it, we talked to people, man, they have, everybody has overcome something to get to this point.
Oh, there's no question.
I mean, you have, and that's why they look at a guy like Trump, who basically his father bailed him out, and not just him, a whole lot of folks here who have been bailed out.
Right.
Some people say, you know, Woody Johnson.
No, Snyder.
It's not a lot of them, man. They were sort of given this stuff. Mm-hmm. These guys, NBA, LeBron, nobody gave LeBron James anything.
Right.
Nobody gave Steph Curry anyway. If you read Steph Curry's story, man, this dude had to work hard. Oh, but every single body to get to be 40 to 1 on a 40-person roster in hockey, nobody gave those guys anything. And that's the great thing about this industry.
Right.
And I think that's why you see such great support, black and white, because they know that no matter what color you are, your ethnic group, if you're in that locker room, nobody gave you anything. In fact, I caught up with Josh McCown, the quarterback.
Who played well today.
He played pretty well today. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
I give him some
credit. You know, he's almost 40 years old.
Yeah.
You know, but I asked him, I was curious. I said, well, what about white players? Because this has sort of been painted as a black issue. And the question is, well, so at what point will the white players step up? And he says he actually gave, I thought, an insightful answer. And this is what he said. And so, A, the question is, you've seen a lot more white players because now it's a team issue.
Right.
And then it becomes, when he says, fire guys, now it becomes, wait a minute, freedom of speech issue.
Yeah.
And so, you've been around for a long time. How do you frame this issue? A, as a sort of white players, B, as freedom of speech issue, then as a labor issue.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I think I think for this thing to improve in our country, white leaders are going to have to step up and address it and talk about it and have conversations. And so that's where it starts first. I had the good fortune of going to Capitol Hill last year with Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin. And that was a great experience for me. And I think what's beautiful about a locker room is that we're all for our logo. You know, we have it. And so there's something greater than ourselves that we're serving. And so it draws us together. That's not always the case in our country, and it should be. We should be serving something greater than ourselves. And when we can't find that, everybody, you know, gets to sides, like you said. And I think it's up to us, you know, no matter what color your skin is, but especially in the white community, to be able to sit down, have conversations, and learn so that you understand different stories, so that you can better be educated on how to handle these issues.
I thought it was great. I write a column called Locker Room Talk, mm-hmm. based on what he was saying a long time, Locker Room Talk. I said, okay, I spent about 40 years in locker rooms. It's kind of interesting because, you know, you guys talk about each other, joke, signify, that kind of stuff. And that's kind of where he is, signify. I said, okay, well, cool. That if that's what it is, maybe the locker room is a great spot, because there comes to be a point where you guys, okay, enough is enough.
Enough is enough, and that's it. Like, it's hard because, to me, when you're at a job, I really feel like you should be focused on that. Like, let's just focus on that. But you know, hats off to Colin Kaepernick for having the courage to you know, to do what he did to bring light to it, and I have a ton of respect for that, for his courage, and you know, when the spotlight gets bigger and the narrative gets stronger, I think it's important for all of us to stand up, you know, and today was a good day for that, and the locker room is a perfect place to start, because like I said, in a lot of respects, I feel like we're outpaced the rest of society because the team draws us to shed issues and be for one another. And so, you know, my hope is that our country can find that we would find something greater than ourselves to get unified around and shed the rest of the issues.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I think it's true, not just the football players, but I think white, and that's happened in every single movement, the civil rights movement. There are a whole lot of white folks who looked at what was happening and they said, you know, this isn't what we signed up for.
Right.
You know, and they went down to places like Alabama, Mississippi. A lot of them lost their lives.
Right.
And in losing their lives, I think they realized, wait a minute, we would thought this was about black people. It's not. Black people just simply represent a larger truth about this nation. And so I think that's kind of what's happening with a lot of white players. It's, you know, number one, these guys are our teammates.
Right.
You know, and, I think one of the bigger issues is at the big time college football, basketball thing. That's where a lot of the intimidation comes in, because Alabama, you don't think that a lot of young brothers, Alabama or Mississippi State and all these, Clemson, you know, they have the same feeling. But I, without knowing it for a fact, I got to believe those, you know, coaches are basically bullying them or intimidating them, whether saying stuff or just inferring.
Right. No, there's no question about that. I mean, you've seen it. You know, you've lectured at schools where these players won't show up, and you talk to one of them and they'll tell you, hey, you know, we're not really encouraged to go to these type of things.
Right.
And not only that, I mean, it's much deeper than that. I mean, you talk about, you know, activism. Hell no, they don't want that.
Right.
But they don't even want them to get an education. They don't want anything to distract them from just playing a game and making us money.
Right, 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 right. I mean, you think about it. And in fact, I wanted to do this for the undefeated, is look at activism post-University of Missouri.
Hmm.
You know, because that was like University of Missouri players threatened to not play.
Right.
And they worked. They fired Chance. Who else you want to fire?
And that was Missouri.
That was Missouri. And
imagine Alabama.
Well, see, I think that people like Nick Saban and all that, you know, I think, again, you could kind of intimidate players. But he knows in his heart of heart, if Jalen Hurts and a bunch of other players said, you know, we ain't playing, because and we have these grievances and we're not playing, he may huff and puff, but he ain't going to blow the house down.
No.
Because they know that at the end of the day, the coaches, our fortunes, our future, our being, rest on these players. I got three houses, you know, at least two of them because of these kids. You know, but of course you hope to intimidate people so they won't really see the power that they have. And maybe that's what we're seeing gradually here with players. Like you said, Jamal, I mean, it's not everybody. In fact, there's only a few, but you don't need everybody.
Right.
All you need is just a few people to show. It started with one person.
Right.
It started with one player.
Right.
One player who had the nerve to face the firing squad. I mean, metaphorically, of course, and kneel down. And now, a year later, man, this has become like a forest fire.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows what this is going to be by the end of the year.
Right.
And the question is, okay, so what's our end game here? And this is where I fault DeMaurice Smith. It's such weak-kneed, spineless leadership that you've got all these players out there, you know, putting stuff on the line, and the head of the labor is saying nothing. I mean, he put out a statement here and all that, and this ain't the time for statements. You know, you've got to at least be bold and empower your lieutenants. And each of these teams, you know what, you talk to a couple,
right,
those guys,
yeah,
right?
And
they act
player
like
reps.
They know what they are.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, they didn't realize that this is part of the deal. This is part of your job as a player rep. Well, you know, it's almost like, you know, what kind of position is that?
Right.
But you're right. I mean, and who's the leader? You know,
right.
What are you telling your lieutenants to do?
Right.
Or at least having a discussion about what you can do.
Yeah, what you can. How can we support this? How do we? And again, I keep, you know, like this is a labor issue. This is a labor issue. This is a freedom of speech issue. This is not whether you like the flag or the police. I mean, that's where I started. But this is basically a labor issue. You cannot do that to one of my members. It's just let them hang out like that. So, you know, we will. It's like a great novel or something to find out what's the next chapter.
Right.
You know, what are they going to do next? What's LeBron going to do next?
You know?
Like he said, they said, we disinvited you. He said, what disinvited me? I said, I was going to come anyway.
We were coming anyway. And Trump loves to do that. You know, he's always disinviting people or firing people who already quit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or he heard through the grapevine they were going to quit. I'm going to fire him first.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
I mean, he's king of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, and also, you know, you talk about, you know, the support the people who don't support. I mean, Kenny Stills also went on about, you know, how he's fighting on Twitter with people who just don't understand and they're not willing to understand. But it's also important to know that they're, you know, they have support in this also. It's not, right. You know, there are a lot of loud people who are screaming all kinds of things at them and, you know, threatening not to watch. Now, you know, they're threatening to boycott the NFL, the people who don't like the protests, but there's a lot of support on the other side. And right. I mentioned this last time. There were people who wanted to boycott because you weren't protesting, you know, because right. Kaepernick wasn't signed.
Right. So at the end of the day, what do you stand for?
Right.
So, well, we stand for profit. Right. That's what the NFL is. We stand for profit.
Right.
And I think that's another problem in itself. When your highest value or the highest value in society is money, you know, mammon, you got a problem. You do have a problem because you're what I call is, so you're now overseeing the erosion of the American soul. And I think that's sort of what we're doing. I looked at Rex Ryan today in some segment because they had him on TV.
Right, I saw that.
And he was like, yeah, you know, he was kind of get his sort of, you know, well, yeah, I introduced Trump and blah, 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 and all that, but hell, I didn't sign up for this. We're a little late, Rex.
Yeah, what did you sign up
for? Yeah, what did you sign up for?
You should have gave Randy Moss a call then, like before you supported him. Somebody would have told you something.
Somebody told you, I don't think this is a good idea. But now that
all of a sudden you didn't know what you said.
Yeah, it's making me look bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
we tried to tell you, Rex.
We tried to tell you, but you know, now that, you know, again, it's hard to backpedal because Randy's looked at him. Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can, yeah, don't, and you can't let them backpedal. You know what I mean? You can't. Don't forget where people were.
Obviously, Ray Lewis. I mean, you coming up to the White House and Jim Brown.
Right.
You got. And we know why you did it. You got his foundation. Right, you're trying to get some money.
Right.
You know, but you know, you knew who this guy was. Right. You know, you're 80 years old. You know who this guy is. Right. And now that he's, you know, and it's not so much him because I'm not sure if he believes. I think, you know, he's just...
And he, you know, some people have that, what do you call it, collateral or whatever, you know, things they've done.
Right, yeah, right, nothing. He bankrupted the USFL.
Right.
You know, that, I mean, that's kind of the thing he did. But I don't necessarily want to focus as much on this guy.
Right,
as on what are you going to do?
Right.
In other words, when somebody keeps pushing you and talk about your mama and signifying, and talk about your shoes, okay, you know, that's enough. We're just going to duke it out now. And what does that mean?
Right.
What does duke it out mean?
And the NBA players, they do. They at least over, you know, war of words and on Twitter, they duked it out.
Well, we'll see. I mean, under their collective bargaining agreement, they've got to stand for the national anthem.
Right.
So now we'll see how many of them.
But that only means that's a rule. That only means that you could be fined.
If you don't, so. But let's see. And again, I think that you have a clear. A clear rationale or rationales of why what we're protesting, you know, we're not necessarily protesting the military, but we may be protesting war.
Right.
We're not protesting the police, but we're protesting police misconduct and police brutality.
Right.
You know.
Right. And the other side is always going to try to blur the lines and make it seem as if, you know, you're against everything when it's really, you know, you're trying to be specific about something and you just have to articulate it.
And that, yeah. And that is the thing I think you need to articulate. And then that becomes an issue because in this, you know, I've got problems with that, with who these quote-unquote black people are, or, you know, who emerge as these leaders. You know, because, I mean, you know, the people emerge as leaders of the movement, and that's lucrative. Mm. You know, everything, I mean, and I think even Colin's got to be careful of, you could be so seduced by this. That next thing, you know, you're singing the blues in an air-conditioned hotel, you know. And but you know, I think that if he doesn't play one more down, I think people will look back at this year, probably 30 years from now, they'll look back at this moment
right.
where he started this revolution.
His name will never be forgotten.
Right, right. Colin Kaepernick, you know. And in fact, I'm thinking now maybe he just does not need to play. Because
right.
let's say he played and all of a sudden, you know, boo, you know, those five interceptions
right.
in one game.
Right.
Then why don't you go back? Why don't you go back kneeling? Take a knee.
Yeah, give a speech. Sup.
So maybe he should just kind of like, you know, listen, we'll just kind of keep,
right.
you know, being like that figure that never hits the field again, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Hey, listen, man, I know we're going to wrap this up, but. The one person probably all happy about this is your boy Carmelo.
Melo. Oh, you got to talk about Melo. Melo traded.
He traded, and I think after I think people never even, unless you really locked in.
Right. That was totally looked over.
Like a thief.
He skated through it, and
he's done.
He's gone from the Knicks. He demanded it. He finally gave him some more teams he was willing to go to. Goes to OKC with Russell Westbrook and Paul George. That's a solid three.
That's not bad now. Yeah. That's not bad. If they, again, I think, like locker room talk, I think they got to have a couple come to Jesus moments too. Because Russell has been kind of like, this whole guy carrying the load,
Right. I mean, he's passing now. At least he's passing. For whatever reason, he's getting those triple doubles, which means he's getting 10 assists.
Right. Well, Carmelo not going to pass.
Well, I think Carmelo, I think he knows he's getting older. I think Carmelo will be a little more unselfish here.
I wonder what that would look like. I guess when he was a rookie, when he's at Syracuse, he was a complete player.
Well, you're right. That's why I always point to that when I argue for Carmelo, because I go back to watching him at Syracuse. He was a complete player, rebounder, passer, right. Scorer, put him on his back, win the national championship. I mean, when you go to the Hall of Fame, and believe it or not, he is probably a Hall of Famer when you look at his numbers. They count everything. They count your college stuff, too. Yeah. It's basketball.
He is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But is he a – can those guys – you're right. That's a pretty good team. I think Billy Donovan cannot be unhappy with that. It just now is, will those three – superstars say, okay, this is what we've got to do to win.
Hopefully, yeah. And we'll, time will tell. It's going to be interesting. The NBA is going to be fun. It's always fun. Off-season NBA is always fun.
Yeah, but except, like I said, because of all this stuff.
Well, and it'll be interesting with that, too, because they talked a good game on Twitter. Now let's see what else.
As Richard Pryor sent Jim Brown to Richard Pryor, what you going to do? So, good, man. This has been, once again, the president has not disappointed. He has.
Right.
But in his disappointment, he's given a lot of people a lot of stuff to talk about. One thing I'd say at the end, though, for all our, sort of liberal friends in the media and every place else, a lot of people are getting on this bandwagon and talking about Trump and all that. But, you look at a lot of these news organizations. Look around. Look around your executive team. Look around your management team. Look around, and how many, if Trump were to go into, some of these production meetings at some of these big places or some of these, page one editorial meetings, he'd be there, well, wait a minute, you talking about me? Where are your black people?
Right.
Because a lot of these things are like completely white, so people talking stuff, but they're basically kind of saying what he's saying is that, well, we ain't hiring any black people either.
Right.
But we're talking this game. We're talking about racism. So I think that there is a gauntlet. There's definitely a gauntlet, which we finished because we're getting ready to leave.
Yeah, we're out of here. Congrats to the Jets, first victory of the year.
Yep.
Impressive fashion, against the lowly Dolphins.
That's right.
1-2 is better than 0-3.
Absolutely.
And the Giants are 0-3 now. So.
Oh, they lost.
I don't know if they're coming back from that.
That's going to be tough. But, it's a long, there's still, 13 more games to play?
Yes, there are.
That could either be a steep mountain or it could be a mountain they can climb.
Right, or a great story. Could be a great story. Yeah.
Jamal, it's always been a pleasure.
Yep.
It's always a pleasure. So we will, I guess we'll see everybody back here.
Next week sometime. Sometime next week. I know you're going, we can't say where you're going. We already did.
We did last episode. But they remember that.
go back and check it out just for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you do go back, what do you want them to do? They want to.
Yeah, when you do go back and rate the show on iTunes, leave a comment, check us out on Twitter, interact with us on Twitter at brospod, BROSPOD, Bill Roden on sports, on Facebook, we're on Instagram, all that good stuff. Check us out.
Bye, everybody. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.